Technorama episode 622, The Goose is Getting Fat. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome to the, an arena?
Yeah. Okay.
It's big. It's big. This is the universe. The Technorama Dome.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you're returning, you know we're all full of hot air. Mm-hmm. We appreciate you giving us your time. Either way, my name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me right over there in the other window, that window, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. I had a nice weekend. Didn't do a whole lot. So it's relaxing.
Oh, man. I got all kinds of stuff done.
Did you?
It was a very productive weekend. Yes.
Well, I would say mine was productive as well because I didn't do anything but relax.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It must be in my DNA. I have a really hard time doing nothing. I really do. Well, it feels like I'm wasting time if I'm not doing something.
Right. Well, no, I know the feeling, but sometimes you got to slow down and, you know, smell the roses, right?
I know.
That's what Ferris Bueller told me to do.
You know, stop and look around. Life might just pass you by.
That's right.
There it goes.
Yeah. Don't blink.
All right. Pretty good, though. Shall we begin with our feedback? We did have a question of the week last week, so let's get into that lovely feedback music. Well, I click a link here.
Letters. Oh, we got letters. Oh, Chuck, it's your karaoke time.
That was last night.
Oh, you're off tonight.
Still recovering from doing Bruce Springsteen's Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Yeah.
Hokey smokes, we got a lot of comments on this one. It was pretty easy, though. We said, if someone says to you, say a movie quote, what's the first one that comes to mind? And we got a lot of them. I'm going to read through mine. Craig, you can take the Technorama ones. And
I got one too. I got some in there too.
Gary Lindro said, "What does God need with a starship?"
Yeah, that's a pretty easy one. I would go with that one too.
Okay, let's alternate here. What do you got?
Okay, so on the Technorama podcast post, Stefan Offson says, "Improvise, adopt, and overcome."
Earl Begley says, "Never tell me the odds." All right, it's your challenge, listener, to know where each one of these comes from, because I'm not sure I know every single one of these.
I don't know either, but this is an easy one. Ben Raggington says, "You're going to need a bigger boat."
Oh, yeah. Well, buddy Dan says, "Hello, my name is Indigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die."
Right. Spaceballs. Oh, there goes the planet.
You're not supposed to quote the movie.
He literally said it in there. Spaceball. Well, they did quote the movie. Wait a minute. In all fairness, they did quote the movie inside the movie.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, they do break the fourth wall more than once in that movie.
Hey, they should have put Spaceballs the quote. Oh, there goes the planet.
Merchandising. Our good buddy Rich, who does an awesome Commander Adama from BSG, says, "I'll be back." I'm going to do this without the impersonation so you can have more of a challenge trying to guess where they're from.
Here's one from Greg Green. "I want my $2. You know, I know a movie that's from. Do you know?
It's on the tip of my tongue. Where is that from? I read it and I went, what?
It's a John Cusack movie.
I'm drawing a blank.
Better Off Dead.
Oh, okay. That's probably why I didn't recognize. I recognize the quote, but I don't think I've seen that movie.
The little kid on the bus, the newspaper kid. You know, he was stiffing the newspaper kid, and the kid wanted his $2. So he's tracking him down.
Sean says, "And don't call me Shirley."
Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, yeah. Rob Weiss, he says, "Inconceivable."
All right. We'll get another one. Sherry says, "You can't handle the truth."
I know what that was from, too. Let's see. I'm looking down some of mine. My friend Charlie Bowers. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Oh, we have a classic here. I was going to skip over. There's no crying in baseball. We're going to skip down to, of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, she walks into mine. There you go, youngsters. See if you can figure that one out.
And my friend David Alexander says, I'm torn, but he says he's torn between two quotes. They're here and this house is clean. Both for Poltergeist.
Yes. Craig, you're giving the answers away.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I not supposed to? Okay.
We're making this a challenge for the listener. Okay. Oh. My cousin Jeff says, maybe it's a tumor. It's not a tumor. And he spelled it that way too.
I think everybody can figure this one out. Fragile. It must be Italian.
I've got some that are just memes. Like, get to the chopper.
Right. Let's see. Wait till he gets a load of me.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah.
There's another GIF here, animated no less. It just says, "Kahan." I'm not sure what that one is, but this guy doesn't.
That
look
was from
happy.
Star Wars. Oops.
You got any more? Are you out?
There's so many. I know. I'll be your Huckleberry. That's
frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. I have a bad feeling about this. Oh, one of my favorites, of course. Easy, baby. 15's my limit on Schnitzelgruben.
Yeah, okay. There's a couple in here that are a little colorful. I don't know if I'm going to repeat them on this show.
One ping only, Vasily. That's from our good friend Melissa. All right. Lots of them. And thank you, everybody. Wow, they just keep going, don't they?
Hey, and by the way, there's links to all these, too.
Yes, in the show notes. You can find them, or you'll probably find one of our posts. Oh, I think somebody just posted, or somebody did a like. That's what it was. All right. Real-time updates. Thank you for joining us. I'm a leaf
riveting
on the
podcast.
Wind.
We'll announce likes as they come in.
Yeah, there you go. I've heard dumber podcasts, honestly.
And here comes another. Oh, there we go. Wait. The little three dots are bubbling. Somebody's commenting.
Mike says, I'm a leaf on the wind. Oh, I like that one.
I've heard that a million. That's a good one, too.
All right, let's finish that off, and we will come back with another question for you at the end of the show. We post it in social media next week. Oh, I had one. I wrote it right in the show notes so I wouldn't forget. What's wrong with you people?
Yeah. Oh, I love that movie.
Oh, I couldn't resist.
Actually, you know what's funny? It's not really a spoiler, but I'm trying to decide if it was or not. But on The Mandalorian on Friday,
yes,
they mentioned the TPS reports.
Oh, no.
I was
really?
Like, what? I said, did he just say what I thought he said?
Probably, just for fun. The other one that I thought was funny was... Donna's watching the Hawaii 5-0 that was like from 2010, 2011. I think it might still be running. Yeah, the recent one.
I think it
still
is.
And in 2011, they had one of the, I think it was the police officers or the agents, and the guy who plays, I mean, when you watch the show, the guy who plays the forensic, the pathologist is Hero from Heroes.
Yeah,
the guy from Japan. And the guy who plays the police officer, this is like the first time they've met each other. He's Greg, one of the other heroes on Heroes. And they get together and say, have we met before? You look familiar. No, I don't think we've met before. You look really familiar.
Right.
Because right when they said that, I said, oh my gosh, this show has two people from Heroes on it. I wonder if they'll make something of that. And they played off of it. It was really funny. I like the way they did that.
That is pretty cool.
All right. Should we do the history thing?
All right.
History away.
Do it. We only got a few days left.
History on. It's on this day in history for December 16, 2020. This is the 351st day of the Gregorian calendar. That means there's only 15 days remaining in the year. Whew. I'll tell you how I dedicated that last night in karaoke. It was on this date in 1843 that the discovery of Octonians by John T. Graves, who denoted them with the bold-faced O has announced to his mathematician friend, William Hamilton, discovered the quaternions in a letter on this date. Now, if you look up the octonions and the quaternions, it's a mathematical system that extends the complex numbers. If you thought complex numbers were mind-bending, this is even more fun because the like multiplication isn't transitive. It's really fun.
Right. Yeah, sounds riveting. That same date on 1907, the American Great White Fleet begins to circumnavigate the world.
The Great White Fleet? Is that the one that included Moby Dick? I'm not sure. Yes. 83 years ago today, Theodore Cole and Ralph Rowe attempted to escape from the American federal prison on Alcatraz Island in San Francisco Bay. Neither is ever seen again. Unsolved Mysteries wants to know.
And also on December 16th, 1947, William Shockley, John Barden, and Walter Britton built the first practical point contact transistor.
Yes, William Shockley. You should know that name from history. Mm-hmm. He was part of that Peter Gabriel song, Shockley the Monkey.
Yeah, that's how I remember it.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to English novelist Jane Austen. She was born on the state in 1775. She lived a long time before I thought she did.
And Johann Wilhelm Ritter, German chemist, physicist, and philosopher, was born on the same date in 1776.
1 year later, Viktor Bunyakovsky, the Russian mathematician and academic, was born 216 years ago today.
Hmm. And George
Santayana.
Santayana, excuse me. I threw an extra syllable in there. Spanish philosopher, novelist, and poet was born on the same date in 1863.
You may not remember the name, but you will remember the phrase. He's one of his things that he's known for is, those who do not remember the past are condemned to listen to Technorama.
Yeah, I heard it that way, too.
He wrote that back in like 1920-something. Bertha Lamfricht, the American electrical engineer, was born 151 years ago today.
And born December 16th, 1882, German physicist and engineer Walter Messinger.
Arthur C. Clarke, the British science fiction writer, was born on the same date in 1917.
And born 1928 on December 16th, American philosopher and author Philip K. Dick.
What are the odds, man? Arthur C. Clarke and Philip K. Dick, they each have a middle initial.
in their professional name, yes.
American singer, songwriter, guitarist, and producer Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top was born in this date in 1949.
And also turning 51 today is American astrophysicist, astronomer, and academic Nobel Prize laureate Adam Rice.
American computer scientist and academic Jen Goldbeck is 44 today.
An American actress, musician, and model, Kristen Ritter, was born on the same date in 1981.
Jessica Jones! Woo! Listener birthdays include December 17th, our own Jorga Schrauen. On the 20th is Phil Burchill. The 9-year-old I started listening to Technorama with turned 21 this year in 2017.
Now he's an adult and has a career.
Oh, hang on. It gets better than this. The 21st is James Ballard, a.k.a. Carrick Sindru. Bo Pace on the 22nd. Also on the 22nd, Luke Chuckstalker Smith, who is now 20, Craig. 20.
Yeah.
That wow. Young boy we have a picture of who was like, you could use his...
We met him a couple times at DragonCon.
Yeah. He's now grown up, moved out of the house, and in college. What happened? When did we get old?
We didn't. They did.
Oh, okay. It's a good thing they put the deer in.
Yeah. Hey, time stands still right here at Technorama.
We can reverse the aging process. You go back and watch our old videos. Also on the 26th is Jason Poloni in Tampa, Florida. That's the way it was on this day in history for December 16th, 2020. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, you go over to... Where is it? Bing! Got it. ChuckChat.com/wiki or ChuckChat.com/birthday. Either will work. Either or either is acceptable, according to Grammar
Girl. We're cutting over to birthday, just saying.
Are we? We're going to deprecate the old one? Okay, if you got bookmarks, you want to update them. We're going to have to send out a software upgrade.
I learned a long time ago, I don't delete anything. We just kind of set it aside, but we keep it around.
As long as humanly possible. Is there still chuckchat.com/webcam?
I don't think...
No,
I think that's probably gone by now.
That got lost in the migration last spring. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much, everybody, for signing up. If it's your birthday and we didn't get to your birthday, well, happy birthday for you.
It's easy for you to say.
Suddenly, I feel like dumb Donald from the Cosby Kids. No, that was Mushmouth that had the stutter. Anyway, whichever one. Yeah, let's listen to the music as they go away.
I was thinking more like Porky Pig, but okay.
Oh, fiddlesticks.
Good night, folks. I always liked how he would always say it, something else.
A lot of times he would say something that was more complex than what he was trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
That's right.
I almost forgot. I was singing John Lennon's Happy Xmas last night. Mm-hmm. And so this is Christmas, and what have you done? Well, there was one verse in there where I said, say goodbye to 2020 and hello to 21. Like, I'm going to sign this thing myself. So if you're not watching that, you can catch it on Facebook.
Hey, yes. I might have to go back and look at it because I did not have internet last night. But I did have something fascinating this morning. It's not in the show notes, so I'm going to kind of go off script here for a second. But this morning, I was in Hendersonville, and I was walking the dog. It's about 5:30, almost 5:45, about 5:30, I guess. And as we were walking, I had a headlamp on, and we got to a place where the road beside our house, there's a big opening. It's almost like a circle. So there's no traffic there. You know, I turned the light off and was really looking up at the stars, and I saw a satellite. I could track a satellite going by.
Yes.
And I saw another one, and all of a sudden, I started seeing meteors, shooting stars.
Yes.
I counted about 10, and I kind of stopped at that point because they weren't like rapid, but it was like, if you just watch the sky for a moment, you'd see a few of them. And I think it was trying to look it up. I think it said it was the Geminid meteor shower. Geminid.
Yes.
Meteor shower.
They named them after the constellation where they originate. So
it said the peaks this weekend. And it was really cool. Like I said, I bet I saw at least 30, just sitting around.
That's pretty cool. That's a good rate. And you were out in the, in a clear sky, not a urban light pollution area like I am.
Oh, yeah. I turned the light off and it can get really dark. About that time, you can almost see, on the horizon, the sun starting to slowly make its way. Mm-hmm. But it's dark and there's no light pollution there really to speak of.
Was it cold?
It was not really that bad this morning.
Oh, nice.
53.5, something like that.
Probably warmer than it was here.
That'd be a first.
No, it happens. But
yeah,
it
was really fun. It was really cool.
Neat. So you had yourself an astrological moment.
No. Yeah.
Astronomical. Cool. Astronomical. Well, both, well, really.
I went back and sat down with Juno and with my coffee, and I just sat there in the chair and watched them. I almost wanted to lay down in the street and just look up.
Why didn't you?
That'd be the one time some traffic comes through that little road, But no.
In other space news, yes. Good news. Did I do a good news? I think I did.
Not yet.
Yes. Play another one then.
Oh, wait.
Top secret news, everyone.
Well, it's not really top secret news because it's in the news now. From CNET.com, it surprised, dazzled, then disappeared in a flash. In the early hours of Sunday morning, the sample capsule of Japan's Hayabusa 2 spacecraft plunged into the atmosphere over the mining town of Kuberpiti in South Australia, blazing an ephemeral trail of fire through the sky. You know what they mine in Kuberpiti?
What they mine in Kuberpiti? I don't know what.
Opals. Opals.
Oh, do they? Okay.
Yes. In fact, most of the Kuberpiti, I think, is underground. Above the Lookout Cave Motel in the center of town, just before 4 a.m. local time, or 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Saturday, about a dozen people gathered and mingled. Tripods were erected and camera equipment was fine-tuned and pointed at the sky. Then, without a sound, a twinkling point of light appeared out of the dark. Santa Claus! No, it moved quickly. The crowd erupted with oohs, and some pointed their phones at the sky. Among those wowed by the show were 34-year-old Ross from Townsville, Queensland, and his two sons, 6-year-old Max and 8-year-old Chase. Quote, "It was pretty cool," Ross said. It was worth getting up early for.
Yeah. Wow.
Locked within the capsule was the first ever subsurface sample from an asteroid. The Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency confirmed that the 16-inch container had touched down on the flat ochre plains of Woomera Prohibited Area, the WPA, I hope I said that close enough, more than 200 miles southeast of Cooper Pedy at approximately 4:37 a.m. local time. The landing was the culmination of a decade of work by JAXA scientists and engineers, and it came 6 years after Hayabusa 2, which is about the size of two washing machines slapped together.
Why I hope do I... it looked more professional than that.
I'm thinking that would be the Technorama satellite. It would really be two washing machines slapped together.
That's all we could afford.
This spacecraft traveled over 3.2 billion miles on its journey to near-Earth asteroid Ryugu and back, spending over a year using specialized camera, radar, and infrared imager to survey the spinning top-shaped rock. On two occasions in 2019, it collected samples from the surface in brief snatch-and-go maneuvers. Masaki Fujimoto, deputy director of JAXA's Institute for Space and Astronomical Science, says the mission has been one of the defining moments of his life as it came to a close. What, the mission or his life?
No, the mission.
Oh, good.
He's out of work now.
It was obvious the stunning finale and recovery operations would be bittersweet. And Fujimoto says, "This is the last time we will all be together." Kind of sounds like that scene at the end of Dirty Dancing. But the mission isn't quite over yet. The recovery of the capsule took place in the pre-dawn dark of the outback, and confirmation of the capsule's collection was confirmed early on December 6th. Initial data analysis occurred in Woomera. The team then shipped the capsule via a chartered flight from Australia to Japan, where it will be ferried to JAXA for further analysis. Woohoo!
Now, we've been talking about this mission for a long time.
We haven't always pronounced all the words right, but that's, Technorama. Right.
This is the one where they kind of bounced off of the thing and knocked up some stuff and started picking it up, right?
I'm pretty sure, because there wasn't a whole lot of gravity on that asteroid.
Right. And I think the more current one from NASA, they actually landed on it and scooped some stuff up and tried to put it inside of a container and bring it back. But I'm curious to see what they find out about this.
A lost contact lens, a left sock.
and a four-leaf clover.
And and one earbud.
Yeah.
It's been up there since the dawn of the solar system. Now we know who the creators are. Hey, Kathy, good to see everybody showing up in the chat. Should we do another story? You want to read this one?
Yeah. So here you go. Scientists say they have come up with a potential way to make oxygen on Mars, and it doesn't involve Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, I was going to say, you put your hand in that three-fingered thing.
Yeah. Give it the Vulcan high five.
And then the rods go down and they melt the ice and you get the air. Yeah.
Okay. I always thought that was a cool outcome. I never read the original book, and I thought that that was a pretty cool thing.
Speaking of Philip K. Dick's birthday.
Yeah, that's true. In the high-stakes mission that could take 5 years to complete, NASA wants to land astronauts on Mars in the 2030s. Transporting enough oxygen and fuel on a spacecraft to sustain the mission for anywhere near the length of time, however, isn't currently available. The way NASA plans to address the problem is by deploying MOXIE. You got your MOXIE, yo. No, not that kind of MOXIE. No. Or the Mars Oxygen in situ resource utilization experiment.
They're trying too hard again.
Yeah. So anyway, so yes, they are. This system is in testing phase on the Mars Perseverance rover, which was launched in July. The apparatus will convert the carbon dioxide that makes up 90%, 96% of the gas on the red planet's atmosphere into oxygen. Now, on Mars, oxygen is only about 0.13%.
Not enough.
Not quite enough. You have to breathe pretty hard to get that of the atmosphere compared to 21% of the Earth's atmosphere. Scientists in Washington University in St. Louis have now said that they have come up with another technique that could complement MOXIE. So they're going to MOXIE their MOXIE. So the MOXIE system essentially produces oxygen like a tree, pulling in Martian air and pumping and using electrochemical process to separate one oxygen atom from each molecule of the carbon dioxide, or CO2. The experiment technique proposed by
VJ.
Yeah, he used to work at MTV, right? He's a VJ?
Right. VJ Romani.
Okay. Yeah, VJ Romani and his colleagues use a completely different resource, salty water in lakes beneath the Martian surface. The study by Romani, a distinguished professor at Washington University Department of Energy, Environmental and Chemical Engineering, and his colleagues published last week in the journal PNAS. There's all kinds of journals, you know. Anyway, there's a lot of information here. I'm not going to go through all of it, but they have Martian lakes. They're talking about making oxygen out of the water. And what was the other thing? There was something else in there. But anyway, I'll leave the rest of the article for you.
They send up people with very small fingers, and they can just take that CO2 and break off the carbon and have the O2 left and just one.
It's kind of like the using the tweezers to unfold the proteins.
Yeah. You could try that. Yeah. Let us know how that goes.
My buddy Elton Chapman says, breathe in on Mars and out on Uranus.
Nope. Let's move on with the news. NVIDIA found a way to train AI with very little data. Oh, that's wonderful. Interesting. Let's find out what they've done.
Hey, too bad they can't do that with people.
Train them with very little training. NVIDIA has developed a new approach for training generative adversarial networks, or GAN. Again, with the acronyms. That could one day make them suitable for greater variety of tasks. Before getting into NVIDIA's work, it helps to know a bit about how GANs work. Every GAN consists of two competing neural networks, a generator and a discriminator. In one, where the goal... excuse me. Got a little bit of a rough patch going here. In one where the goal of the algorithm is to create new things, new images, the latter is what examines thousands of sample images. It then uses the data to coach its counterpart. In order to create consistent, believable results, traditional GANs need somewhere between the range of 50,000 and 100,000 training images. With too few, they tend to run into a problem called overfitting. In those instances, the discriminator doesn't have enough of a base to effectively coach the generator.
Hey, by the way,
not a hot
dog. The machine learned how to coach by watching a bunch of football games, so it knows how to cuss out
the referees,
the other players. Hustle, work it off. You can get up. Go. Yeah, never mind.
Okay. That would be the discriminator. In the past, one way researchers have tried to get around this problem is to use the approach called data augmentation. Using an image algorithm as an example, again, the instances where there isn't a lot of material to work with, they would try to get around the problem by creating distorted copies of what's available. Distorting in this case could mean cropping an image, rotating or flipping it. The idea here is that the network never sees the exact same image twice. The problem with that approach is that it would lead to a situation in which the GAN would learn to mimic those distortions instead of creating something new. NVIDIA's new adaptive discriminator augmentation, or ADA, approach still uses data augmentation, but does so adaptively. Instead of distorting images throughout the entire training process, it does selectively, and just enough so that the GAN avoids overfitting. The potential outcome of NVIDIA's approach is more meaningful than you might think. Training an AI to write a new text-based adventure game is easy because there's so much material for the algorithm to work with. I still died of dysentery, though. The same is not true for a lot of other tasks researchers could turn to GANs for help. For example, training an algorithm to spot a rare neurological brain disorder is difficult precisely because of its rarity. However, a GAN trained with NVIDIA's ADA approach could get around that problem. As an added bonus, doctors and researchers could share their findings more easily since they're working from a base of images created by an AI, not patients in the real world. NVIDIA will share more information about its new ADA approach at the upcoming NeurIPS conference, which starts December 6th. Probably already happened because we're recording this on the 13th.
That's pretty cool. NVIDIA is really, I started to say up in their game, but they do video cards as well as they're getting deep into AI. Recently bought CPU.
AMD?
No, not AMD.
Intel? Xilinx?
Oh, gosh. My mind's gone blank. Okay. Never mind.
Well, anyway, that's nothing new.
They're really getting, they're expanding beyond just video cards.
They got a new building. I mean, they were working on their new building last couple of years in Santa Clara. Okay. Would you like the last story in the news section?
Yeah. Now, this is not a problem of mine, but I will share this story.
So, one out of every four men.
Yeah, but I think, okay, I don't mean to laugh at that, but I do laugh at the kind of the story a little bit. So, erectile dysfunction drug and antidepressant accidentally swapped in the factory.
Okay.
Make your jokes if all you want. So, pharmaceutical company Avacare issued a recall Wednesday for two different medications after pills were inadvertently mixed during bottling, according to a new report from the FDA. The generic drugs being recalled are
sildenafil.
Sildenafil.
And,
I'm sorry?
Sildenafil. It's the name for Viagra.
Yeah. To use to treat erectile dysfunction. And trazodone, which is an antidepressant and a sedative. As you can imagine, you would expect one effect and wasn't quite the put you to sleep. Anyway, so unintentionally taking sildenafil may be dangerous for some patients because it can lower blood pressure and interact badly with other medications, especially people who take nitrates to treat conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart disease. The FDA warns.
Well, it's also terribly dangerous to pregnant women. You know, they say, don't get this anywhere near a pregnant woman.
Oh, so, that's true. I mean, yeah.
If there was a pregnant woman that was, you know, needing an antidepressant, that would be terrible.
That would be. Yep. And so anyway, if you take either one of those, sildenafil or trazodone, hydrochloride, be sure to take a little closer look or return it.
Yeah. But now this is through Avcare. I mean, if you went to your Walmart and it doesn't have Avcare packaging on it, then you shouldn't need to worry about it. But if you are concerned, we do have links in the show notes that talk about, you know, which lot number of sildenafil tablets or trazodone hydrochloride you can check there. So just keep an eye on your medications, people. If suddenly the tablets that used to be, you know, oval are now round, double check. I know sometimes things change depending on who you get them from. My one of my prescriptions, you know, used to be a small white tablet when it came from, you know, Walgreens, but now I get it through Amazon. Did you know Amazon sells not prescription drugs, but like over the counter drugs? They're looking to get into the prescription drug business.
Oh yeah,
That would be incredible. I mean, you'd see Walmart's and CVS's collapsing. If Amazon started getting into pharmaceuticals.
Oh yeah. Oh, by the way, I am going to credit Clinton for saying this though. When I throw this story out there for, you know, for you and Clinton, myself, it says if your lack of depression lasts more than 4 hours, consider yourself lucky.
See your doctor.
Hmm.
All right. If your podcast lasts longer than 4 hours, it's probably Technorama.
Technorama. Move on.
Let's move on. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to skip over the break on this one and move right into the hacks and strange stories.
Look, yes. There's no break in there now. It's gone.
Oh, you removed the break. It's not broken anymore. So we do the hacks and strange stories. And from Ars Technica, apparently rats love driving tiny cars, even when they don't get treats.
Of course they do.
We find some interesting stories here at Technorama. This is the podcast that covers stories not many others do. So rats that learn to drive are more able to cope with stress. Okay, we'll take that. That's an interesting opening line. That might sound like the fever dream of a former scientist turned car writer, but it's actually one of the results of a new study from the University of Richmond. The aim, I need to make the font just a tiny bit bigger so that I can see it aside from the tiny bit of car. The aim of the research was to see what effect the environment a rat raised in had on its ability to learn new tasks. Although that kind of thing has been studied in the past, the tests have been particularly complicated. Anyone who has spent time around rats will know they're actually quite resourceful. So the team, led by Professor Kelly Lambert, came up this time with something a little more involved than navigating a maze. Driving. Of course.
Wow.
Why not?
Yeah, where else are you going to go with that? Why not up, right?
If you're going to teach rats to drive, first you need to build them a car or a rat-operated vehicle. The chassis and powertrain came from a robot car kit, and the transparent plastic food container provided the body. Explaining the idea of a steering wheel and pedals to rats was probably too difficult. So the controls were three copper wires stretched across an opening cut out of the front of the bodywork and an aluminum plate on the floor. When a rat stood on the plate and gripped the copper bar, a circuit was completed and the motors engaged. One bar made the car turn right, one bar made it turn left, and a third made it go straight ahead. Did they put brakes on this thing?
No. Hey, they're in a race. You don't use your brakes.
Like Tron. You just crash into the wall.
Yeah.
If proof were needed that many existing psychology tests are too simple, rats did not take long to learn how to drive. You probably drive better than half the people in Phoenix.
Oh, boy.
Soon they had weapons. It's like, get out of my lane. Pew,
pew, pew. Yeah.
Okay. The driving was conducted in a closed off arena, 1.5 meters by 0.6 meters by 0.5 meters, where the goal was to drive over to a food treat. They pull into a drive in.
Of course. Yeah.
Another rat comes up on roller skates.
I want the Flintstone steak special,
which is, you know, like a regular steak. It tips the car over because it's a tiny car.
It's like a little squeaky toy.
3 5-minute sessions a week for 8 weeks was sufficient for rats to learn how to do it. The placement of the treat and the starting position and orientation of the car varied throughout. So the rats had, you know, I kind of messed up on the camera work there. We were just kind of staring at your face while I was reading. Pardon about that.
Well, it could be worse.
What we get when I miss my wife. At the end of each experiment, each rat went through a series of trials conducted a day or two apart where they were allowed to drive around the arena, but without any food treats to see if they were going to do it for any food. Hey, we're just going out for a road trip. We're cruising.
Cruising.
They were.
Hey, look, there's a chick. Pull over.
They were found to be going around in patterns. Then they had to put up signs that say no cruising the boulevard. Yeah. So, yes, actually, in case you were wondering.
They forgot to mention that these were also the same rats they were teaching to drink alcohol.
They get pulled over for a DUI.
Hey, the video is actually kind of cute to watch. They were going towards the food.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, a little video.
Because they learned how to drive.
they had a little dish over there, and he actually saw it. He stopped, he hit the wall, and he turned around, and he turned it around and went towards it. So,
well, yeah. Speaking of people that go to things, there are a number of people that go to this show on Sunday night, excuse me, at 9:30 Eastern time on Facebook. We try to get started on time. You can join our Facebook page and get alerts. We also do this on YouTube, and I believe I still have a YouTube notice on my mobile device. Woohoo! So
there you go.
Technorama is live. Good thing, because I thought they died years ago. And people in the chat room, let's give a shout out to the people in the chat room, because it is that time of night. I've got a number of people. Mike Robeson, Dan Coyer, one of our Patreon people, we will be announcing in a moment. Sonny and Judy Carnes, I assume friends of yours, because they say, hey, Craig, looks like you guys are having fun. John Miller Jr., Kathy Spurgeon Luke. Who else do we have? We have Elton Chapman.
Yep.
And that's all I've got. Do you see anybody else that I missed?
Nope.
You said Clinton was in there.
No, I was just mentioning Clinton from our chat when he...
I see.
Anyway, his remark on the...
He's just not going to show up for our show.
I know. He's got bigger names on the other line.
Okay, well, we'll talk to him on Thursday on the next topic is Trek.
Yeah, we'll straighten that out. We'll guilt him.
That means we get into Remember When... Mathematicians solving an old problem. Because you were bored with the math before, why not have more math? Go ahead, Craig.
All right, as soon as it comes up. Here it goes. So, here's a simple sounding problem. Imagine a circular fence that encloses 1 acre of grass.
Yes.
If you tie a goat into the inside of the fence, how long a rope do you need to allow the animal to access exactly half an acre?
So wait, it encloses 1 acre of grass. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you circular. Need something where the radius squared is half of the area of the radius squared before. Now, quickly people would say, oh, just half the radius. Well, that's not true because it's square. So it's going to be somewhere, it's going to look more like a tire shape. Anyway,
no, it's that. Did it not say? Imagine a circular fence that encloses 1 acre of grass.
Right.
Circular.
Right.
Not a square.
I didn't say square. Acre. I said circular.
Oh, okay.
It's going to look like a tire.
Said square acre. Okay.
No.
Anyway, it sounds like a high school geometry, but mathematicians and math enthusiasts have been pondering this problem in various forms for more than 270 years.
Really?
Yeah, I guess so. Why don't they just go out there and practically put a goat on a rope and see how... Anyway.
Oh, they attach it to the fence. I thought they were attaching it to the center, which, yeah, that makes it significantly more complex. This sounds like a calculus problem.
Yeah, well, and while they've successfully solved some versions, the goat in a circle puzzle has refused to yield anything but fuzzy, incomplete answers. So after all this time, nobody knows exactly the answer to the basic original problem, says Mark Mayerson, an intermittent mathematician at the U.S. Naval Academy. The solution is only giving approximately, or the solution is only given approximately. But this year, a German mathematician, named Ingo Ulrich, finally made progress, finding what is considered to be the first exact solution of the problem, although even that comes at an unwieldy reader and unfriendly form. This is the first explicit expression that I'm aware of for the length of rope. It certainly is an advance. So, of course, it won't upend textbooks and revolutionize math research, Ulrich concedes, because the problem is an isolate one. It is not connected. Anyway, it's not connected to other problems or embedded within a mathematical theory. But it is possible for even puzzles like this to give rise to new mathematical ideas and help researchers come up with a novel approach to other problems.
We should see if NVIDIA can adapt some of their processes to figuring this out.
Well, here you go. You want me to read it to you? See his answer?
Sure. Four.
So, let's see. An answer appeared in the diaries 1749 edition. It's the lady's diary. It was furnished by Mr. Heath, who relied upon trial and a table of algorithms, among other resources, to reach his conclusion. Heath's answer, 76,257.86 square yards for 160-yard rope. For 160-yard rope. That was an approximation, excuse me, I'm getting a little dry in throat, than an exact solution to illustrate the difference to consider. I'm not going to read a bunch of equations, but... But if you scroll down, it is a lengthy article, but they start explaining how much rope you need on a circular fence to do a circular or half of a circular acre.
Yeah, I wasn't getting the image at first. I thought they were attaching it to the inside, and I thought we'd have this donut shaped of uneaten grass. But they attached it to the fence, which if you were to consider the circle in the diagram we're looking at, they have the rope attached to the 6 o'clock position. And then, if he could reach halfway in, you'd have this arc that kind of goes from about the 8 o'clock position to the middle of the circle and then down to about the 4 o'clock. We'll make the rope longer and that arc changes shape. So there's another diagram just below it called the exterior problem, where you attach the goat to the outside of the fence and you let him run around in this grazing area.
To me, that makes no sense. They said a 1 acre.
Yes. The initial problem was
a circular fence that encloses 1 acre grass.
Right, and you attached it to the inside of it. So I don't know where the exterior problem came from in this article, but it's a fascinating.
I think it's people reading too much into it, because that's thinking way outside the circle.
They're going for extra credit. It was that kid in math class that went for extra credit. All right, I've solved the exterior problem too.
Yeah.
Should we thank our patrons, because they have been hugely helpful in the last few weeks? We want to thank you one more time for the people who donate to this show: Alexis Duran and Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen and Abner Braverman. Thank you very much to Ben Vaughn and Brian Brown. Chris MC, we thank you. Dandy Man Coyer, who is on watching now, seeing the fruits of his labor fall apart. Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrawin. Thank you. Thank you very much, Christina and Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Spiffy, Steve Cody, and Sweet Steve London. Thank you. Your donations to our Patreon fund at patreon.com. There it is. patreon.com/technoramapodcast. As little as a dollar a show. Keep this show up and running. We talked about the Mac Mini motherboard earlier. It's still going. It's rock solid. It's a huge piece of the production of this show, both audio and video, and helping us read show notes and whatnot. So happy to have it back and functioning properly. And it was your donations that addressed the repairs of that. So thank you. Thank you so much. And I believe we've got a software subscription coming up soon. So,
oh boy.
Yeah. And 2022, I think we're due for domain registrations. So hang on to your hats. We'll have it all covered, with the huge thanks to our patrons.
Hang on to your Santa hats.
Hang on to your Santa hats. So thank you very much. I'm going to stop that music. And what's next? Pass the remote. So patreon.com/technoramapodcast.
Here you go. I'm handing you the rope.
Which way is it? Over here?
Yeah.
Thanks. I think we both have the same show this week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we do.
We do. And I'm going to try and read this without my reading glasses on. So our show this week is Mank on Netflix. It came up as one of the suggested shows. I don't know if it's an official docuseries or not, but it is based on a lot of true-to-life characters. Herman Mankiewicz is a writer, a movie writer back in the 30s, and this centers around his story and how he wrote the script or the screenplay for Citizen Kane.
And not just that, but it's a little bit of a biographical drama about him.
Yeah.
Coming up to that point and writing.
There's continuous flashbacks. So they introduce his friends, his family, his characters, his coworkers. Louis B. Mayer is in there. William Randolph Hearst is in there. Of course, Orson Welles is in there. Not the actual characters, but I'll get into the actors in a little bit. This is all in black and white, and I love it from the opening. It looks like, you know, kind of that Wizard of Oz, you know, black and white. The clouds are going by, and the 3D letters with shadow effects are in the sky. Really well done. It's a Netflix production.
And when they start getting the black and white display of like with the actors and stuff, lots of times it's very stylized, like you would have seen in a 30s film.
Yes,
where they're lit really well, and you know, and
the scenes kind of fade to black. Which I thought was, you know, they really took a page out of the old director's book on this one. Mm-hmm. I had a cinematography or a movie class in college, so it was kind of fun reflecting on some of these. Going, I know where they're getting this influence from, and the directors or whoever put this production together really did a wonderful job. There's a number of kind of subplots they keep flashing back to. There was the, I forgot if it was the senatorial or the gubernatorial race in 1934, and one of the guys who plays, Bill Nye was in there. So the recap of some of the actors you may recognize: Tom Pelfrey, who played his son Joe Mankiewicz, is also very recognizable if you've watched Ozark or if you've watched Iron Fist. So he's in both of those. Charles Dance played William Randolph Hearst. He's probably well known to many of you as Tywin Lannister from Game of Thrones. Or, if you watch The Crown, he's Lord Mountbatten. So, and of course, I mentioned Bill Nye. Lots of other characters and actors you may recognize.
Yeah, when I saw Bill Nye was standing up there talking, he was talking, like, professing, not professing, he was talking to a bunch of actors.
He's running for office.
It took me a minute. They showed him twice. The first time I went, was that Bill Nye? And then they showed him again and went, oh, it is.
Oh, I recognize the voice first. I'm like, dang, if that doesn't sound like Bill Nye, it's like, it's Bill Nye.
Well, so what did you think about the movie? I posted this on Facebook. I think it wasn't technically a riveting movie, but I thought it was very well done. Mm-hmm. And if somebody doesn't get a bunch of Oscars for this, I don't know, cinematography, best director, that kind of thing. I think it's outstanding, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like you said, it's not a fast moving movie. Mm-hmm. There were points where, I mean, I watched it, I think, in two or even three installments, because I started at about 9 o'clock, and about 10 o'clock, I'm starting to go, oh, I'm not going to make it through the rest of this to the end, because it's about a 2-hour movie. So afford yourself some time or do it in installments. And when I came back for the second part, I found it re-engaging. I went, okay, I'm really kind of getting into this. It was it was interesting to try and piece together, you know, who the characters were and what they meant to him. Like, why does his wife, he says it more than once. He said, why do you love me so much? I mean, he's a chronic alcoholic. I mean, he died of complications from alcoholism. I like the way that the actors interacted with him, and kind of touch points to some of the actors that I remember from when I was younger. Orson Welles, obviously, but John Houseman, he used to do a show called The Paper Chase. And I'm like, oh, that John Houseman. You know, so a lot of these people were in their prime in, you know, the movies of the 30s and the 40s and into the 50s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you forget they were at one time pretty young. They do throw out some numbers about salaries and whatnot. Hey, we're making $1,500 a week. I'm like, wow, for the 30s during the Depression, for a writer, that's awesome.
Yeah. And by the way, this is directed by David Fincher. You know, he's done Fight Club and Seven.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, The Social Network, all those movies. And it was written by his father, Jack Fincher.
Nice.
Which I thought was interesting. I think his father had passed away in 2003, So he had written this quite a while back, and he was able to finally pull it off. I think it was a pet project that he was able to pull together.
They mentioned it a couple of times, at least once in the movie, and said, "Do you know the tale of the organ grinder's monkey?" But they don't spell it out till the very end when William mm-hmm. Randolph Hearst is telling it to Mank in one of the flashbacks.
That's right.
So it's a neat parable. It kind of puts it in perspective and go, oh, is he really, really make, really steps in it at the end. So we're just going to leave it
at
that.
And they did mention Rosebud.
Yes, that's part of Citizen Kane.
Yes, they mentioned Rosebud, but I thought it was kind of funny the way, I don't want to, you have to watch it. But I was like,
what they were speculating, it was a metaphor for, because obviously, Citizen Kane, the movie was about the publisher, and that was, supposed to be Hearst. And there were a number of people that he sort of projected into the story, and they were, kind of saying, well, what is this map to, and what is that map to?
Yeah. So, but it was funny if I remember right, in the movie in Mank, they were like, yeah, sure, that. And I was like, I think it's like the goat problem we were just talking about. Everybody took it way too seriously. I don't think it was intended to be like that.
I'm curious how closely it was to reality. I'm sure he was probably in a car accident and he wrote it while he was laid up. But what were the interactions between him and Orson Welles? And, did that argument they had inspire the change in the script that he was looking for? He's like, oh, that's good. And she storms out furiously, that kind of thing. So
I have a feeling that, there's probably a lot of truth or half truths in there. I don't know if I'd,
Yeah. I mean, they probably tied it closely to like when Marion went from MGM over to Paramount or RK, wherever she went. So the actors and the writers were, moving around, did Louis B. Mayer really ask his employees to cut their salary? Was he really an insensitive, a good actor, but an insensitive guy? He's making this sob story to his staff going, we have to cut salaries in half. I know it's a lot to ask from you. And he gets them all. Yeah. I'm with you, Mr. Mayer. I'm with you.
Yeah,
and then he walks off the stage and goes, how is that? He just delivered a Pulitzer Prize winning performance or something.
Yeah.
So I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I think it was totally good. Even if you're not interested in it 100%, it's worth watching it for a little while to see the cinematography. I think they nailed it, the direction and everything. As I said on Facebook, if they should win like 800 Oscars for this thing. I thought it was great.
Mank, M-A-N-K on Netflix, because Netflix needs more Academy Awards. No, I'm just kidding. I wish them the best. Okay, we do have one thing for the Geek Library. I'm going to play the song real quick. It is a video, so we're not going to actually show the video, but we are going to talk a little bit about it. It says, this is a quest for Nikola Tesla's wireless power technology. It's a YouTube link. You can find it on our show notes from episode 622 over at chuckchat.com/technorama. And it's they take you to, what was the name of the place? The place in New York where he had his last laboratory and he built the giant power tower.
I was trying to think. I was just trying to remember that
wooden
myself.
Wooden hole. I can't remember now. But they're turning it into a museum. But they got a little sneak peek at this place and the foundation for
Wardenclyffe.
I knew it was a W and two base words. But okay, Wardenclyffe. Thank you. Interesting stuff. I mean, you get a look at how the building is kind of dilapidated now, but they are working on fixing it up. And they talk about he was very smart for his time, but he was constrained by what they knew at the time. This is over 100 years ago, and what they didn't know. So he was under the false assumption that the earth and the air are great conductors, and we can use them to have wireless electricity. He also imagined wireless data communications, which we do have. And I like the guy's statement at the end. He says, I'd like to talk to Nikola Tesla if you were alive today, not so much to say, hey, look, you know, we do have wireless communications and this isn't this great to he said, I don't want to talk to him so much about what he thinks of what we have today, but what he thinks will it look like tomorrow. Because he was a very forward-thinking individual. And I thought that was kind of cool. It was like,
Yeah. So I threw this video in here because, you know, they talk about wireless power technology. But, of course, a lot of it's on Wardenclyffe. As Chuck mentioned, you get to see some behind the scenes or the way it looks right now. And anyway, I thought it was kind of fascinating because Tesla is a little more, well, everybody knows about him now, but you know, for a long time, he was the lesser known person that is responsible for a lot of the stuff we do.
How about AC electricity?
Yeah, it's all over the place. It comes and goes.
Oh no! Yeah. All right. Let's leave you with a question of the week on that bad dad humor.
All right.
Question of the week is, what happens regularly that would horrify a person from 100 years ago, say if Nikola Tesla were around today?
You're sexting?
You're abusing my wireless communications. Okay. Thanks, Greg, for that initial volley out there.
I mean, that's what, I could just say Tesla. Oh, you can text wirelessly? Wait, you're doing what?
Cat videos and porn. That's a great use for it.
The great drivers of technology.
That's right. All right. We wouldn't have 4K TV and never mind. I'm not gonna go there. Okay, we've got a Patreon show to record right after this, so I am going to play the outro music and wish you all a safe and happy week. We will talk to you with luck. We'll talk to you one more time before the Christmas holidays. And if you want to talk to us, you can get a hold of us on the listener line at 707-530-2428. That's 707-530-CHAT. You know, that ends with the same four digits as our last number. How about that? Email us at technorama@chuckchat.com. You can also find all this information and more over at chuckchat.com/technorama. Thank you very much, Craig. You do a wonderful job, Chuck, as always with these stories. Although we might have to run them past the editors next time, you know, about the depressants and the Viagra and whatnot next time. But
well, in all fairness, the links have been there for most of the week.
All right. Until next time, give us a binary high five.
All right. 101, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.